You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Jeff and Eric noticed one day that nobody on the internet talked about movies, so they had to find a way. They'll podcast thoughts on new movies they've discovered through autumn, winter, spring, and summer on Fridays. And when you run out of films you love to view, tune into jokes, playing games, all this and more you'll find contained on PBS with Bear and Snyder.
Hello and welcome to Movie BS with Bear and Snyder, the only podcast on the internet. I am your host, Jeff Bear. This is my co-host, Eric D. Snyder.
Hi, I'm Eric D. Snyder. That's Jeff Bear. We're the hosts of this show, brought to you by OneOfUs.net. A little clarification, we're just the only movie podcast on the internet. Not the only podcast.
That's right.
Come on.
That's right. That'd be ridiculous.
There's a gardening podcast.
And I listen to NBA podcasts because I'm in too deep.
And there are 43,000 Game of Thrones podcasts, where I guess all they do every week is just talk about what happened on Game of Thrones that week.
Yes. They explain to people what happened.
I guess you could also just watch Game of Thrones.
Oh my gosh.
But if you don't want to do that,
I think
you
just threw, like, I don't know, 40 of our friends under the bus.
I don't know. Every person I know has a podcast, and about half of them are about Game of Thrones.
I look forward to you talking to people at Fantastic Fest. You're off to a great start.
They like any of them listen to this show.
That's true.
This is a safe space here. We don't have a new iTunes review, so we're not going to read one.
No old-time voice for you people.
Nope.
Old-time radio voice. What would old-time voice be? What's your old person voice? Okay, yeah. No, old-time radio voice is much better than that.
So let's just review a movie. This
Mother.
A little late for Mother's Day. But whatever. A little counter-programming.
But whatever. Is that your review of the movie?
But whatever. This is written and directed by Darren Aronofsky. Do you remember what his last film was?
No.
His last one, which I knew was his, I didn't realize it was the most recent, was Noah, 2014.
Oh, yeah.
Noah, and then Black Swan, 4 years before that.
Right.
And The Wrestler, The Fountain, Requiem for a Dream, and Pi. He has not made a lot of movies.
No.
And this Mother is certainly one of them that he has made.
Your eyeballs will be glued to the screen.
The whole time, I think I was making Tucker Carlson face. We just sort of look baffled, sort of interested, but what?
I found myself tremendously curious. Mm-hmm. Tremendously curious. So, right from the beginning, there's somebody with fire surrounding her, and then Javier Bardem has some like crystal thing from the Lord of the Rings.
Sure.
And then there's a house, and they're working on it, and stuff happens.
Jennifer Lawrence appears. So right from the start, as the very beginning, we're seeing these things that are if they're real, they must be magical or something. And so we figure this is probably not literally real. This is an allegory, or this is a dream. This is something that is not normal everyday life. It's presented in the normal real world, but it clearly is not meant to be taken literally.
It could be in someone's head, or again, a dreamlike sequence. We don't know, but there are elements of restricted movement. Based on setting, there are elements of like a time lapse where we're not sure how many characters know how much time has passed or why it has passed, or there's just things on the fringe. But then otherwise, we are just given Jennifer Lawrence fixing up a house, Javier Bardem being a passionate poet who cannot find maybe Jennifer Lawrence was his muse at one point. We can't quite tell that.
No,
but there...
no, he does tell us. He says he had written his successful book of poetry, and then he was blocked. Oh, and then he had the fire that where he lost everything, and then he met Jennifer Lawrence, who has since, he's sort of hoping she'll become his muse, but so far that has not happened. So far he is still blocked. And by the way, none of these people have names. We're never told, I mean, presumably they do, but we're never told their names. The credits refer to Jennifer Lawrence as Mother, Javier Bardem as him. And then
we got some more people here.
They're visited somewhat randomly by a doctor played by Ed Harris, who needs a place to stay. And then his wife, Michelle Pfeiffer, shows up. And here's where it all begins to feel like it felt very much like a dream. When you have a dream, things happen, but the details don't get filled in. There's a lot of, and so then I was dressed like a maid and I was doing, you know, and things just sort of happen without explanation. And there's a lot of, especially from the Jennifer Lawrence character's point of view, where she kept being almost about to ask a question and then there'd be an interruption and some new person would show up. Just these sort of random, unconnected things that felt very much like the logic of a dream.
Well, in Aronofsky's style, which I think we need a name, the Aronofsky fixation technique, perhaps, where the camera is planted on an individual, normally the lead, and following them and almost just watching their perspective or the back of their head. As we see what they are seeing. This is what he does with his films. He's done it since Pi, and he's keeping at it. And here it does give that claustrophobic feel, especially because we're also just in a house.
We're only
so
house.
There's
it's
claustrophobia there.
It's a big, big, lovely country house.
It is. But just like that dream sequence concept, there's so many times, in a dream, you'll talk about like you're trying to speak. Or you can't be heard.
Right.
And that is Jennifer Lawrence's character, whether people are hearing her or not, is not the point. She constantly feels like she is not being listened to.
Right. She's being ignored. And there's some talk of whether maybe she and Javier Bardem will have a baby at some point. And Ed Harris and Michelle Pfeiffer show up, and they are very rude house guests.
Oh, man.
And that's almost
so cringeworthy.
That's almost comical sometimes. How inconsiderate they are. And again, they're inconsiderate, not quite in realistic ways, not in the way that, again, it feels like a dream. And then more events occur. And it's probably as far as we should go as far as events occurring.
We can also talk about the Gleason brothers showing up.
Yeah, the more people show up. And things happen very quickly. There is at one point a death, and then the funeral just a few hours later. Logic of the collapsed time. And so here's what it comes down to is I thought about this movie a lot in the 15 hours since we saw it. And
did you choose to read up on it? Because after we're done, I chose to listen to an interview. So I kind of want to maybe get into that, but I also want to just talk about the movie separately before that.
I thought about it a lot and then looked a little bit to see if other people had the same ideas that I did, and they do. But there's some variety in interpretations. There's a couple of things that I feel very confident about. Oh, this is clearly what that was. But then there's a point in the film where it kind of shifts. The interview you listened to, was it with Darren Aronofsky?
Uh-huh.
What is
Jennifer Lawrence.
What does he say? Without being spoilery, I guess.
Well, I think it is a little spoilery, right. So I don't know exactly how we want to talk about this.
Let me tell you.
He definitely knows what this movie is about, and he's surprised that other people are thinking it's about something else.
Okay.
And he's allowing it because art is open to interpretation, but you could tell that he was annoyed.
Okay. Well, that's fair.
In the interview.
That's better than, I don't like when people, the guy who made It Comes at Night, was like this. It was like, well, you know, I don't, it means whatever you want it to mean. I don't, you know, I didn't have something in mind. Well, that's a lie. You had something in mind that you meant it to mean. So I'm glad that Aronofsky at least has something. Let me tell you what I landed on.
Okay.
In the first part, anyway, Jennifer Lawrence is, she's Mother Earth or Mother Nature. And then, so Javier Bardem is like God, I guess, who created her. And maybe the house is the world, maybe. But then it, to me, it gets very specific as these two strangers show up, who then would be Adam and Eve, and they they break something valuable and get kicked out of a room, and then their two sons show up.
And the two boys, yeah.
Right. And meanwhile, Mother Earth is sort of being, you know, invaded and taken over and having everything taken from her. But then
ignored.
Right. Yeah. But then there's a point later on where I think that she kind of shifts from being Mother Earth to being Mary, the mother of Jesus.
Oh.
Or to where it seems like she's that the Earth metaphor doesn't work anymore. So maybe it's the whole Bible. Maybe he's doing the Bible, starting with Genesis and moving to the New Testament. And because then as things go on, the way things end up, that seems to hold up. So I'm fuzzy on some of the details, but I feel like that's the general vibe, is that she represents Mother Earth.
That that is his interpretation too, the Mother Earth interpretation.
Okay.
Whereas a lot of people are, I guess, from his perspective, are noticing celebrity aspects of it.
Well, yeah.
And the corruption of celebrity, which he did not intend for that to be a focal point of the film, even though that's happening. Oh, and Jennifer Lawrence, from what it sounds like, does not care to work with him again. It was a pretty amazing interview.
Isn't
it was for the Hollywood Reporter. It was just like literally she was occasionally like, yeah, but sometimes that was too far. Like, right. Like,
isn't she his girlfriend right now? Isn't she his girlfriend? Are they dating?
I have no clue.
I think I read that.
That's interesting.
Because I think that's a valid interpretation as it gets into the celebrity thing, or just sort of what it's like to live with an artist, with someone who is only focused on his art and is creating to the exclusion of everything else, which could then be seen as somebody said that the movie is Darren Aronofsky's warning to anyone who would be in a relationship with him, which currently now
totally.
Is Jennifer
That's
Lawrence.
That's how it feels, right.
That should be a red flag. So there's that. And I think there's also generally maybe some commentary on misogyny, on how we treat women in general, and how women, they keep this character, this mother character, on the people go from worshiping her and being attracted to her to calling her names. They want her to be pure and to be a whore and to be a mother and to be a sex symbol. And they want her to be everything and don't listen to her thoughts. So I think that's all valid. I the more I think about it, the more I really, really like the movie and want to see it again
and
get more into what the
it's
things
impressive that way.
What the allegory all means and how it holds up.
It's very fascinating, and there's so much ground to cover in absorbing the film, because it really does take you into some very surprising, unnerving territories.
Right.
What's really weird is I want to say there's horror elements at play here, because at first I'm very nervous about a few certain things, including that basement. And it's really weird how he you can tell Aronofsky doesn't care about some things as much as others, or he's just like, yeah, I'm going to leave this there for later. But like the first time something specific happens in the basement, I am just desperate for her to spend more time in the basement.
Right.
And it's like he doesn't care that I'm desperate. Or because it didn't feel like he wanted it even to be a tease.
I suspect that things like that, I hope, will come into focus better on a second viewing, where I understand what they mean, what they represent. Like the basement and the things in the basement, what those represent. I hope that once I get that it will, the amount of time he spent with it will make sense, but I don't know. I'm guessing.
And here's the thing. We're all busy in this crazy mixed up world.
Mm-hmm.
Part of me just wants him to be like, okay, here's the cheat sheet.
Right.
Go ahead and read this and then see it for a second time. Part of me would, I know that's, you know, that's
seemed
not
like,
art. That's not how you
like that would defeat the purpose. That if you read the cheat sheet, you wouldn't need to see it a second time.
Well, no, because I really did. I mean, goodness, there's so much to admire about this film. As far as like, I thought even, we were in what I would consider an ordinary theater.
Yeah.
Sound design was just fantastic.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
All the creepiness, the voices, like feeling like they're around you, like all of this stuff is just really engaging.
Yeah.
And the camera movement that we've talked about already. So I just feel like there's a lot to take in. And I don't want to do homework right now.
But well, it's not homework. Just go see the movie again. That's the thing. There's not a cheat sheet. You just go see it again and you piece it all together yourself.
No, that's the homework for me. Piecing it all together myself. Well, because to me,
I can't help you with that.
And here's the only thing. He's already talking about how this movie is, you know, getting interpreted in different ways than he intended.
Right.
So in my opinion, that means he's not very clear cut on what everything represents. Like, I don't know if he has an answer for everything that's going on in that movie, as opposed to, oh, it's a good vibe. I don't know.
I don't know if he has an answer either. But when I see it again, I'll have a better idea. I don't think there's anything wrong with a movie that requires you to see it a couple times to all the things.
I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that movie. I'm saying, like, take away some things on my plate and I'll be happy to spend some time with it. That's all I'm saying.
It sounded like you were saying that maybe he didn't do a good enough job getting his point across if people are misinterpreting it. It seemed like you said that.
I am specifically, yes, I am referring to that in the third act, based on what I feel was going on and what he feels is going on. Yeah. Yes. So for that reason, yes, it's a critical eye to watch that third act and try to kind of tear it apart and see what sticks.
Yeah. There's some somewhat unsettling, disturbing content in the film that evidently when it's played at Toronto, or wherever there were walkouts or something. And I kind of don't get that, because at the point in the film where the most unsettling things happen, it is at that point so clear that this should not be taken literally.
Correct.
While these are horrible ideas, no, that's not really happening to that character. And, you know, just it's all a metaphor. So I feel like get over it. But
I don't know if you noticed, we were sitting next to each other. I had a moment.
I did notice that we were sitting next to
each other. I had a moment, but thankfully the movie recovers from that moment. I mean, not smoothly, not relaxing in any stretch of the but you're right. It does. It's in that fantasy realm to where you can't.
You can't be too offended by it.
You can't be too offended after a moment. You can't because you're already there. It's, yeah, sunk costs, all that stuff.
I give Mother an A-.
Wow. Right after you saw it, what would you have said?
I need to think about it some more.
Oh, I hate when you do that. Mm,
think about things some more? I know.
Yeah. I give Mother a 7 out of 10. And I will be seeing Mother again. I don't think the wife's going to want to sit through that one, though.
I wouldn't think so.
No.
Not if you phrase it like that. At least I want to sit through this. Why sounds so appealing.
Should I trick her?
That I would enjoy. Tell her it's a nice Mother's Day movie.
Yeah.
Then we also watched a movie that was not in the theaters, but went to the Netflixes, called Okja.
Yeah, we finally got around to seeing it, and we saw it together.
We did indeed. This is by the director of The Host. What's his name? Bong Joon-ho directed The Host, that monster movie several years ago, and he also made Snowpiercer just a couple years ago. Was his Snowpiercer, and
not only that, this deal with Netflix raised a few eyebrows. This is kind of the first one. This is before Brad Pitt's War Machine. And some other like bigger name straight to Netflix things happened.
Yeah, they paid a lot of money for this, and then it premiered at Cannes, and there's some people didn't like the fact that it was Netflix, and then they wound up liking the movie and whatever. Everything gets a standing ovation at Cannes. This is a peculiar movie
there's so much going on.
About a boy and his dog, except it's a girl and her mutant pig. Basically, a company has designed these super pigs to solve the world food problems.
You gotta throw hippo in there.
Well, it's pigs that are now the size of large hippos, and they have sort of the face of a dog to make them cuter, which seems counterproductive if your point is to make people eat them. But the idea, Tilda Swinton runs the company. And,
yes, she does.
And they've got these new pigs, and they put 26 of them out in there in the world, different places to farmers to raise them. And then 10 years later, they're going to check on them. And anyway, we're with this Korean girl who has been raising her pet Okja for 10 years. And Okja is now the size of a large hippo, acts like a dog, very smart dog.
Very smart.
And then, of course, there's the company comes wanting the pig. And that's when the girl, Mija, realizes that, oh, they're going to eat this animal and make millions of others like it. And so then there's like eco-terrorists and animal protection people. There's
Paul Dano.
Paul Dano is one of those guys. And Jake Gyllenhaal is a TV animal show host. And Jake is doing something where
Jake has gone overboard here.
The character's normal speaking voice is this high-pitched, effeminate thing. But then when he's on camera, he becomes a normal TV talking voice.
Oh man,
and
Jake.
The performance is a bit much.
It is 80% too much. 20% of it, I was like, Jake. And then the other 80%, I'm like, come on, buddy, change it up, do something different. This isn't working for me. Whereas, of course, like Paul Dano and Tilda Swinton are just spectacular in this film.
It's a fun story. Take some twists and turns with the whole wanting to protect the animal, wanting to protect all animals and everything. And it gets into where you would think it would get into of slaughterhouses and how animals are treated and all that. It's the sort of thing that they say might make you become a vegetarian.
For a while, I was thinking about it.
It did not have that effect on me.
No,
all.
I figured
sorry.
It would.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I continue my policy. I don't want to eat an animal that I knew personally. But I have no problem eating animals that I didn't know.
Well, and sometimes you have to hearken back to your days as a vegetarian to realize, like, you've had experience. You know what it's like.
That was a rough couple of months where I couldn't eat any meat. So bad. And Oakjaw is not completely successful. Oh, the special effects also. The CGI of this pig thing.
Spectacular.
Just incredible. Seamless.
I really wish I could have seen this on the big screen because it's a great looking film.
Yeah. And I guess the only place you could have seen it on the big screen was if you'd gone to Cannes.
I really should have done that.
Straight to Netflix. And yeah, it gets kind of weird and kind of falls apart a little bit. But overall, it's certainly worth watching. I would give it a B.
I'm giving Okja an 8 out of 10.
Now you may be saying, hey, I heard about another movie called American Assassin comes out this week.
You want us to talk about it?
We would love to, but they didn't screen it.
No, we're not. Yeah, okay.
There was some screening some places. This is the Lionsgate thing where they've given up on Portland. We're second class citizens now.
It's got my Taylor Kitsch in it too, doesn't it?
Oh yeah, he's in there. Dylan O'Brien from that Maze Runner movie. Anyway, who knows? American Assassin. That's all the movies. Some good stuff on DVD this week though.
Yeah.
Not including The Mummy with Tom Cruise. That's on DVD. Not including that.
That's a messy fun.
Whatever. Tell your story walking, pal.
All right, I'm out.
But then also, Raw. Was it German or French, that movie?
French.
French, Belgian.
Belgian.
About a girl in college who begins experimenting with cannibalism.
That's one of my top five films of the year right now.
Quite a good film. Raw.
No clue what my list technically is, but that is in the top five.
Very good. And not as graphic and gory as you might think.
But still.
It's not really, not a horror film so much as a coming of age, discovering yourself sort of thing with horror elements.
Oh, man.
Anyway, it's
good.
There's
some elements, all right.
And then Captain Underpants, you saw that, right?
Yeah, Captain Underpants is good.
I believe you. And then...
Did you not see it?
Mm-mm.
You weren't next to me?
I was not.
Peter? Oh, that was Dylan. That was my son. There we go.
And then It Comes at Night.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a good
you re- yes movie. You liked this film more than I did. I liked the director and the attempt,
and we have a copy of that to give away.
That's right,
a fresh unopened Blu-ray DVD of It Comes at Night. And if you are one of our agents and have not won anything from us in the last few months, just send us an email and say you want it and we'll put you in the drawing. What's our email address, Jeff?
MovieBSPDX@gmail.com.
That is correct.
Hey, Eric, what did you watch?
Oh, what did I watch? Well,
yeah, what did you watch?
I'll tell you a couple things I watched.
All right.
I watched Silver Streak
from
1976.
Yeah.
Have you seen
it? I know
that?
It well.
All
Heck
right.
Yeah. Kevin Bacon.
No.
He's on a bike.
Nope.
He's a messenger of some sort.
Nope.
None
of that is right.
Movie? What
Silver,
movie?
Silver Streak is a train, and Gene Wilder is on the train, and eventually Richard Pryor is on the train. He's on the poster right away, but he's not in the movie until halfway through. And then the woman is Jill Clayburgh. It's Gene Wilder and Jill Clayburgh, strangers on a train, and they get mixed up with some criminal types and whatever. And the poster, it's got the three of them, Gene Wilder, Jill Clayburgh, and Richard Pryor on the poster. So I'm thinking this was one of those Gene Wilder, Richard Pryor movies.
Yeah.
And it is eventually, but only Richard Pryor's in like maybe 40 minutes of it.
Oh.
This is it all in the second half. Yeah. And up until that, it's fine. It's Gene Wilder, you know. It's not super funny, but it's pleasant enough. This ordinary guy who gets mixed up in things going on the train. And then definitely picks up when Richard Pryor arrives. But I wonder if audiences in 1976 were annoyed. what seems like misleading advertising.
Yeah.
When Richard Pryor's not there until later.
Quicksilver.
Oh, Quicksilver.
1986. Kevin okay. Bacon, Jamie Gertz. Jack Casey used to be a hotshot stock market whiz kid. After a disastrous professional decision, his life in the fast lane is over.
Yeah,
he loses his nerve and joins a speed delivery firm.
It's not the movie I saw.
No.
No, it was a very different one from that. But Silver Streak, I'm glad to have crossed it off the list of the Richard Pryor, Gene Wilder collaborations. That must have been their first one together, I think, right? Must have been.
It's definitely one of those films that I've almost watched many, many times and maybe even sat through it once.
Yeah. What'd you watch?
Just a little known classic as 101 Dalmatians.
Oh, I like that one with Glenn Close.
No. Yeah. Watched it for Sunday night movie night. And that means with Dylan, the almost 5-year-old now.
Did he like it?
He did like it quite a bit. He was rightfully nervous on occasion for like it was there's so here's something that I didn't remember correctly at all. I thought Pongo and Pongo's wife dog. What was her name?
Lupita. No, I'm thinking of Lupita Nyong'o, the actress. Perdita. Pongo and Perdita.
The way that I thought it was. Oh, they're, you know, they've gotten together, they're having puppies, and they have 101, or they have, you know, 99 puppies.
99 of them, right, yeah.
That's not the case.
No.
And it threw me for a loop, because it's like, their litter was 15, Pongo was very, like, surprised. That was a good number, but a little overwhelming.
Sure.
And then I was just like, well, just wait, Pongo, because the numbers are starting to flow in any second, and it's like, nope, that's the whole scene.
They get more later.
They get more later.
Right.
Yeah. So what happens here is,
I think people have probably seen this movie,
but it goes from 15 to 99, just like bam.
Yeah.
Very surprised. But yeah, the like last chunk pretty much is a fast paced little actiony. We got to hurry. We got to get these puppies. We got to go here. They're chasing. There's a, you know, like Cruella de Vil, just like visually. She's really great as far as crazy goes. And you know, we decided not to spend too much time on the fact that they were going to kill the puppies and skin the puppies.
Yeah.
That is the movie, you know, it does talk about just briefly.
That's what she was planning to do. Yeah.
And then if you guys have forgotten, don't worry. The guys, the couple that have Pongo and Perdita, Roger and Anita, they're going to go to the country and take care of all 99 puppies.
Dalmatian plantation.
Because he finally has a hit on his hands because he's a songwriter.
Yep.
And he wrote a hit song called Cruella de Vil.
Do you suppose that they had to get Cruella de Vil's permission to write a song about her?
No way they did.
Well, actually, let's see. Does she die at the end? Or is it sort of implied that does she go off a cliff or something? Seems like most Disney movies, the villain goes off a cliff.
She goes off a cliff, but if I remember correctly, I don't think she officially dies.
Okay. Well, I mean, they never, like, show the dead body, but sometimes Yeah, I mean, if she died or is gone, they wouldn't have to get her permission. But if she's still
alive, I
feel
like she's definitely going to sue.
And that's the thing. She is definitely a litigious sort. She definitely, if she's alive, she will. Oh, maybe that's the sequel. She's suing them over the song that they wrote about her.
You said I have to watch 102 Dalmatians, which I believe is a real movie.
It is, but that's a sequel to the live action 101 Dalmatians, so it's a different timeline.
Oh my gosh, Glenn Close is in that too? Oh. What about 102 Dalmatians, Puppies to the Rescue?
That's not a real movie.
What's going on here? That is real, but it looks like it's animated, so maybe that's the one.
Oh my goodness.
That I need to focus on. Oddball and Domino are two young Dalmatian puppies that must go out on a quest to save their brothers and sisters from the evil Cruella de Vil.
All right, stop.
And her evil army of poorly made pet napping toys.
Oh, pet napping toys. Good for you, Cruella.
Yeah.
101 Dalmatians, only 79 minutes long. Back in the days when cartoons were short.
It felt longer.
Well, good, I guess. Well, got your money's worth.
Yeah.
Oh, I finally watched They Live.
Oh.
1988 with Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Yep.
Rowdy Roddy Piper, directed by John Carpenter. Do you know the famous line comes from this movie? You know the line, I'm sure, even if you haven't seen the movie.
I haven't seen the movie.
Right. I've come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass.
Oh, yes.
And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Yep.
That's a thing that Roddy Piper says.
It's a great line. Does he deliver it well in the movie?
He doesn't deliver anything well in the movie. He's not an actor. It was a mistake to put him in a role that required an actor because he is not an actor. But it's a fun movie. And I sort of knew the concept that you put on sunglasses and you can see the real world that's being hidden from you otherwise. Good to see that and see the concept filled out and to see. It's funny that it's almost 30 years old and feels very modern as far as advertising controlling you and people being in control. The main thing is there's a part in the middle where there's a 5-minute fight sequence. Literally, it's 5 minutes. I checked the tape of Roddy Piper and who is he even fighting? He's trying to get his friend to put on the glasses so that he can see.
Okay.
And it's trying to get him to do it. And it's literally 5 minutes of fighting in an alley.
Hang on. You said he was his friend.
Well, I know. That's why it starts out. They're friends. And he's trying to get his friend to... It's Keith David. Trying to get him to put these on. And he's refusing because he doesn't want to get involved in whatever this mess is that you got going on here.
It's kind of like, no, I'm not in the mood for pie. Just have a bite. This is really good pie.
Yeah. And so then it escalates. They fight for 5 minutes. It's just a very long fight. The movie's only 90 minutes long.
And at the end, is he so tired that he's like, fine, I'll put on your glasses.
Basically, he's so exhausted lying on the pavement that Roddy Piper can sort of put the glasses on him and, then he can see.
And then he's in too deep.
Then, once your eyes are open, you can't unknow it. John Carpenter's They Live. I like John Carpenter, and I like a lot of his movies. I don't like that they're all called John Carpenter's whatever. It's a little presumptuous, John Carpenter.
Hey, hey, Eric.
What?
You know how earlier you had mentioned our agents...
I do remember that.
...can win It Comes at Night.
Mm-hmm.
How would one become an agent?
Well, it's easy. It just means that it's simple. You buy your way in, is all it is. We have a Patreon fund set up. You pay... $1 a show. That's all $1 a show. More than that would be a waste. Pay $1 a show, and then that makes you one of our agents and thus eligible for the free DVDs and free downloads of the audio commentaries, of which we have 2 so far, and we're going to do more. We need to do another one after Fantastic Fest.
But yes, we do.
We've let it get away from us for too long. Just go to moviebs.com and see the Patreon link there to sign up to become an agent. And we thank you for your support.
We really do. We appreciate it.
Also, if you'd like to keep up with us on, the internet, we're on Twitter over at MovieBS and individually at Eric D. Snyder and at
Bayer Jeff.
He's backwards.
I am.
And we're on Facebook at MovieBS PDX. You can find us over there. And MovieBS.com is our website. And our phone numbers are 801. And that's the end of the show. We're all done here.
I think that's it, yeah.
Yeah. Kind of a light week. Next week will be big. Got a lot going on next week. And then the week after that will be our big Fantastic Fest episode.
I don't think I've teased this at all. Dylan has seen all 7 seasons of a show called Ninjago.
Oh, okay.
He's a big fan.
That's a Lego thing.
It's a Lego thing. This is easily the most built-in fan base thing he's had to then go see a movie.
There's about to be a Lego Ninjago movie.
That's right, and we'll be talking about it on next week's show. And I'm legitimately curious if it's just like, yep, just like any kid, that's it. This is his favorite movie now, period.
Probably, yeah.
Because of the built-in history as well.
It's the things that he already knows.
Right.
I love this movie. It's things that I already saw. It's a thing I like, but more of it. Again.
Guess you're going to love this. Huh. You're going to love this. There was four different really small ones ranging from $7 to $10. Lego, Ninjago.
All right.
Three of them were like Ninjago from the TV series. One of them specifically said Ninjago the movie. I said, like, which ones do you want? Or which one do you want? You can pick out one of these four.
Right.
He studied them.
Mm-hmm.
First one eliminated was the one from Ninjago movie because he didn't want to know about it yet because he hadn't seen the movie yet.
Well, that sounds familiar.
It's working, people.
It's working.
It's working.
Your policy of ignorance carries on to another generation.
It was that thing where I was like proud and sad at the same time. I was like, what am I doing?
Well, and then after he sees the movie, he's probably going to wish that he had the thing about the movie. He's going to love the movie so much.
We'll find out.
We'll find out. All right. So Mother is excellent. I think Mother is great. I want to see it again. And I think that after you see it again, you'll love it more.
Yes, I think there's a chance.
And Okja is good. It's on Netflix.
It really is.
The other weird thing about Okja, for being a movie about a little girl and her pet and saving animals and stuff, they swear a lot. Like, it's a very R-rated swearing kind of movie, which I find very amusing. Like, yeah. Lest you think this is a children's film.
I know, it seems that, yeah.
Otherwise, pretty much would be.
Is this going to be a thing now? We got It, we got Okja, we got like what has the facade of a kid's experience, a kid movie.
Right, right. But actually not
juiced up to R.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there you go. Until next week for Movie BS with Baron Snyder. I'm Eric D. Snyder.
I am Jeff Baer.
Thanks for listening and good day.
Said good day.
OneOfUs.net has been your one-stop shop for all things geek for years. But there's a side to them many of you have never heard. The subscription side. Subscribe and listen to great podcasts like The Breakfast Pub, The Original Gentleman, and the Watch a Movie With Us series. Head on over to OneOfUs.net and don't forget your towel.